Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Good, man. It's going good.
Nice week this week for a bit. Last couple days, anyway.
It has. And so that brings up one of the things I want to talk about or mention now you mention it is when did we create a society of such weak need people that even the hint, doesn't matter if there's no storm, but there might be snow, so they cancel buses.
Oh, that was last Thursday. They all started.
Last Wednesday, last Thursday, and yesterday, yeah. Monday.
Yeah, it's been going on for a number of years now.
It's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
So, like, my daughter went to school, and so the first day, it's like, okay, well, stay home. Second day, it's like, okay, no, go to school, hang out with some friends. I'm sure somebody's going to show up. And so I texted my wife. So did she go? Yeah, she went. She's currently texting me and trying to call, but ignoring all of her calls and texts.
Because there's nobody there. I can understand up farther up north right now because they got a lot. They got hammered.
Yeah.
But down in the Toronto area?
Yeah, it's very mild.
Really?
Lake effect and all that?
Yeah.
So anyway, she finally I responded and says, okay, fine. She signed Stella out of school, let her come home. Beckett is a walk to school. His school doesn't do buses.
Right.
So everybody is there because everybody's within the neighborhood goes to that school. So cancel buses don't matter to them. So he's disappointed.
Well, growing up, there was also always the kindergarten to grade 8 and then the grade 9 to 13 or 12 or whatever province I was in at the time. Like right together.
Yeah.
Nobody took buses. Everybody walked.
Well, when I grew up in New Brunswick, it was like almost an hour bus ride. And we had to switch buses halfway through to get onto the different route that took us if we were going to high school. And, I don't think maybe once a year we'd have a snow day a year.
Yeah, we didn't have snow day.
I can remember times where the bus couldn't make it up our road, so bus driver says, okay, start walking. Okay. And we'd be up to our knees in the snow. And
uphill both ways.
And then we'd have, like, somebody on the road would come out with a skidoo and start ferrying us back and forth to our home by skidoo. And
the good old days, we call that.
Or snow machine, as we're supposed to call it.
Yeah, whatever.
Skidoo is a brand name. Whatever. Yeah.
Snowmobile, snow machine, skidoo, an Arctic. Hop on the old Arctic Cat and go for a spin, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, tone it down a notch.
Yes, I know. Anyways, so three snow days or three cancellations.
Wow. That's
just in the last week.
That's a bit much.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bit much.
Yeah. So you, and I liked the idea, and you went and got one.
I don't.
And I thought, I'm going to try that with my cat. So you got them a water fountain.
Oh, yes, yes.
And it's like, oh, that's a brilliant idea. And since I went out and got
the dog loves it.
So I went out and got one for the cats, and I've been getting so many ads now. It's like, I bought one. Stop advertising on
right?
me. I bought one. So anyways, I bought the water fountain, bought a nice stainless steel, whatever, yada, yada, yada. So it pours out into a small reservoir. The reservoir overflows back through the filter into the tank. So it's constantly running.
Mm-hmm.
And so my stupid kittens, they just think it's a toy.
Right? They put their paws in it?
Oh, we had like, I don't know, 6 or 7 towels laid out in the area to stop the floor from getting wet because it was just towels everywhere. I was like, what's going on? So, so you want to kill them, but they just think it's a toy and they're flicking the water across the room. And
hey, if you need a shoe mat, a small one, we have one.
No, a shoe mat won't work. Like they spread the water so far that the water wouldn't stay within the mat.
Oh, okay. Cause it has the lips around the side. So everything would, you could get at least an inch of water before it flowed onto the floor. But if they're taking it with them, one of our cats would, I think it's Apollo, will stick his paw in it.
Yeah.
And then, like, shake it.
Yeah.
Dude.
What are you doing?
And then everybody else is going, dude, I got a drink out of that. I was wondering why there's so much cat hair in it. Because it's got the filter and everything on it, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And so we did it because, so the ones where it sits a bit high, so there's a lot of water, and it gurgles out when the water gets low in the bottom reservoir. Anyways, the small female cat, Emmy, was she just really enjoyed tipping that over. And so we couldn't put more, we couldn't put enough in it so that would gurgle out, because she just, she tipped it over like 2 or 3 times a day. So like, okay, you're done. And then it was with the bowls. They'd flip over the bowls. It's like, oh my God. And so we thought one of these water fountains, because it's stainless steel, it's heavy. Mm-hmm. It's got like, you know, 4 liters of water in it. They can't knock that over. But no, they can flick the water out of it.
Right.
So
they like, can knock it over slowly and in parts.
So right now the water fountain is running, but I've taken the stainless steel lid off, so there's no reservoir. So the water just comes out of the spout right through the filter back into the bottom. So there's nothing for them to flick around except that little stream of water.
Right.
So they're slowly losing interest in it.
Yeah, we just let ours go, and every so often he'll go play in it, and it's not a big issue, though. And then every so often you're thinking, that water's going down pretty fast, and then you're looking at the dog walking by. Wait a minute.
Wait a sec. Are you drinking that?
But they will drink out of, because she's got a big bowl of water.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'll see the cats over there.
Yeah.
What do you do? Get out of the dog's bowl. You got, I just spent all this money on this fancy-dancy light-up water fountain bowl.
Yeah. It's got a charcoal filter in it for your comfort.
Oh, it's got everything. These cats are wussies.
Yeah.
When did we ever start making weak-kneed, what was the term you used? Animals.
Well, I remember growing up, the cat's food dish, water dish was just like, hey, it's starting to look a little briny yellow. And
yeah, we might want to fill that up again or change it or wash it. Or
but that we grew up on a farm type thing. So it's like, you know, the dogs would go out and drink from a puddle and they didn't care. And the cats, we'd like try to give them some fresh water every day or two. And and now you can't even get a water dish to hold out for an hour without them flicking it over and running through it.
I'm thirsty. I'm hungry. Feed my bowl. Yeah.
Well, we seriously considered, why don't we just leave the toilet seats up?
Great. And you came home to a drowned cat, because one was up there taking a drink and the other pushed him in.
Knocked the lid down on him.
So what happened to the cats, Dad? Don't ask. We're getting hamsters because they're in a cage.
Oh, hamsters. That brings up something, too.
Oh, geez. Welcome to the Zoology Podcast. Yes.
No, this one's good. So did you know that hamsters hibernate?
That's called being dead.
No.
They're dead.
They hibernate.
It died on you.
So as it turns out, a lot of people are going, yeah, it was around Christmas time, and the hamster, he just died. And it's like, well, hang on a sec. Apparently, their metabolism goes so low, their heart is like very low rate of beats, and the breathing is so shallow and low that it looks like they're dead. They get stiff. And apparently, if you warm them up, they just revive. But they're hibernating in the cold. If the room is cold in the winter, you keep the hamster in a cold area, they will just hibernate like a bear in winter.
We always had warm areas for them.
Yeah. If they're ever in a cold area, and it's like, oh, he died. He may not be dead.
We always had them in warm areas. Maybe that's why the hamster was always looking like, oh, my God, I need a nap. Can you, like, lower the temperature so I can have a nap?
I've seen enough stories now where people talking about it go, oh, did I bury my hamster alive in the backyard?
Oh no.
But yeah, so it's if you warm them up, chances are, like, maybe they're dead, but usually.
Well, they are now.
If they weren't sick, if there's nothing going on, they just went to sleep and they started hibernating because they were cold. Oh. So yeah, anybody listening,
now we've got all our listeners going, damn it.
I flushed a sleeping hamster.
He's in the dump now.
Yeah.
He's buried next to the cat and the 20 other hamsters I had. They all seemed to die at the same time.
They all died in winter.
What the heck? I'm never buying a hamster again. So I had Hammy and Hammy 2.
Yeah?
Yeah, growing up.
Did they go to sleep?
No, one choked to death.
What?
Yeah. They used to have these treats you could give them, and Piggy just tried to eat the whole damn thing at once.
Oh.
And choked.
That'd be traumatic.
Well, it was for me in the middle of the night. After that, yeah, I'm sticking to dogs.
How do you do a Heimlich on a hamster?
Heimlich maneuver on the hamster in the middle of the night. Yeah, that was not good. Anyway.
Yes, anyways.
Thanks for that information, Dr. Death.
On to paddling.
Did you know if you take a paddle to that hamster, it might wake him up?
What if you cuddle them and warm them up slowly?
Yeah.
They'll just wake up.
Is that a dead hamster in your pocket? Yeah, I'm trying to revive them. Keep them warm.
They're not dead until they start to stink.
Right? Yeah. Double check your hamsters, people. Yep. Double check your hamsters.
But it is interesting, though. Like, I never had hamster, but I've had friends that had hamsters. Oh, my hamster died in the weekend.
We were always, you either had a hamster, a gerbil, or a rat. Hamster people were, there's more hamster people than gerbil people.
Mm-hmm.
More gerbil people than rat people.
Yeah, there wasn't too
many. We were hamster people.
Wasn't too many rat people. I think I knew of one growing up.
I think, yeah, one or two growing up, and that was it.
Yeah.
Everybody else had gerbils, which were, gerbils were the ones that bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, my gerbil bites. My hamster doesn't. Yeah.
What are you doing to your poor animal that he's biting you?
Stupid gerbil people. Anyway, so the Texas water trails.
Nice segue.
You gotta like that. Because all we're talking about is dead things. Texas water trail. There's a website now. tpwd.texas.gov/boating/paddling trails.
It's a lot easier if you just Google Texas Water Trail website.
Right.
Or Texas Water Trails.
Texas Water Trails. Enjoy fishing and paddling, access to rivers, creeks, lakes, ponds, bayous, and bays on Texas official paddling trails. Over 80 trails provide well-mapped, accessible day trips for all levels of paddling experience. More than 3,700 named streams, 15 major rivers, 3,300 miles of tidal shoreline offer unlimited possibilities for paddling adventures and angling opportunities of all types. So this is pretty recently, September, I believe it was, they released this new website.
It's really neat. So it's when you click on the zones, it tells you, shows you what's in the zone. And it's like, it shows you the different portions. Like, there's a coastal one, there's a northern, there's an eastern, there's a west. I think there's five zones.
Was it five zones? Five zones, yeah.
Yeah.
There's the interactive map. There's a video, which is a preview of the Texas paddling areas. So, yeah, you can click by region. There's the Gulf Coast region. You connect with wildlife-rich waters along the Gulf Coast by paddling the marshes, bayous, and bayside routes. There's the Hill Country region. Discover scenic paddling trails on spring-fed rivers and lakes. You can even experience the excitement of occasional rapids.
Hmm.
Unexpected. That's exciting.
Where'd that come from?
We're all going to die. Piney Woods region. Explore East Texas paddling trails that feature miles and miles of serene paddling through bayous, cypress swamps, and tree-filled variety of East Texas rivers and lakes. Cypress swamps. Do they... When you hear that, do you get image of nice, peaceful...
So
paddling, or do you get like the gloomy something's going to jump out at me vision?
So it's a combination. I've every movie portrays them as very scary. So
right?
You get these cypress swamps, and what it is, it's like trees standing on legs, and it just flooded with water. And in my mind, there's giant snakes ready to drop onto you. There's alligators, crocodiles coming up from underneath. There's like, who knows what other pestilence and all the mosquitoes trying to eat you alive.
Horror movies.
And there's usually somebody off in the woods with a banjo sharpening their knife. And it's like, oh, I'm not paddling there.
Yeah.
But apparently they're really nice.
Yeah, apparently they're really nice. I presume I made it my life's goal to stay away from them.
Yes, exactly.
Based on movies I've seen. There's the Prairies and Lakes region. Experience this region's diverse water trails from rural peaceful rivers to big lake vistas in an urban setting. These trails have something for everyone. And the South Texas Plains region. uncover paddling adventures along the beautiful rivers of South Texas with opportunities to view wildlife from a new, quieter perspective.
So the South Texas Plains region, is that like the Guadalupe and that's the Texas Water Safari area?
I think that's where that one is, yes.
That's what I was thinking. I couldn't.
And the Gulf Coast region.
They never mentioned specific events like the Texas Water Safari. So I was trying to, I couldn't figure out where it was. And I couldn't remember the name of the river, but it's the Guadalupe, right?
And San Marcos.
And San Marcos. Yeah.
So if you go to the website, there's things about planning your, there's a section about planning your paddle trip. Frequently asked questions, paddling events calendar for guided weekends, educational events, stuff like that. Safe and ethical paddling, Texas River Guide, info about flow of rivers, navigation laws, and more, which coming from Canada, something like that, if you're going down there, you might want to check that sort of thing out.
Exactly. Because
maybe there's things you don't know about that.
Yeah, they might. Yeah,
we may take rules for granted.
Yeah.
You know, protect lakes from invasive species. It talks about different invasive species and what you can do to help prevent the spread. Support paddling trails. That one there is, you can go buy like a special license plate.
Oh, okay.
And the money, I guess, goes towards the supporting the trails.
So it'd be similar to the way you can sponsor a highway here in Canada?
Yeah, but I think, well, you've seen like Ducks Unlimited and stuff like that, Raptors, Leaf license plates and stuff.
And here, if you spend enough money to adopt a highway, then you get your name on a sign on the side of the highway.
And you've got to go clean it.
Yes.
And it always talks about future trails, saying, hey, we're looking for people to partner up with to help out make these new trails and stuff like that. So I went through here just checking stuff out. I clicked on Hill Country. Apparently, I can't even spell that on my notes here. The Hill Country region. And it listed six different trails. The Guadalupe River State Park Paddling Trail, just a short drive from San Antonio and Austin. This wild and beautiful 5-mile paddling trail gives paddlers a chance to enjoy some of the Guadalupe River in the Texas Hill Country. And when you click that, it opens a new page with information on that trail. So of the six different trails, so five regions, this one region has six different trails. I clicked on one of the trails, and it has information all about that trail. It talks about the trail access. So the Guadalupe River State Park, it's that the put-in. It gives the GPS coordinates. A little note saying the park is located 30 miles north of downtown San Antonio at the north end of Park Road 31. To get there, travel west on State Highway 46, 8 miles west of the intersection of State Highway 46 and U.S. Highway 281, or travel east on State Highway 46, 13 miles east of Bourne. And then it gives an address. And then Nichols Landing County Park, Specht Crossing.
Really?
Yep.
I didn't see that one.
Yeah, see? That's just specifically why I took this.
That's even how you spell my name. That's
right? See? Huh. I'm there for you, buddy. I'm an eye out.
When I Google my name, it's there's not too many things pop up. Like, I know in Pennsylvania there's a minister with my name, and but it's pretty rare. It's not a very common name in the U.S. and Canada.
Oh, there's a lot of Rollies, especially in Michigan.
Yeah?
Yeah. Anyway, Nichols Landing County Park is it says type takeout. So you can start at Guadalupe River State Park and then take out at the Nichols Landing County Park. And again, it gives the GPS coordinates. It says this park is located on Old Spring Branch Road, just 3 miles west of Highway 281 North off Spring Branch Road. It gives all the where it is, how to get there, that sort of stuff. Access to Nichols Landing site is free except on weekends and during the off season. On weekends and holidays during the summer when the attendant is on duty, parking costs $4 per adult, $2 per kid.
That's not too
when
bad.
When parking a vehicle. So if you're just swinging by to pick somebody up who, you know, hey, drop me off here, I'm going to paddle for the day, pick me up down there, you know. And $1 per person if dropping off without parking.
That's curious.
Right? Fees are used to maintain the access point. And then it gives a little bit more information about the Upper Guadalupe Nichols Landing Paddling Trail continues beyond Nichols Landing County Park for another 5 to 10 miles, depending on where you choose to take out. Then there's a navigating the trail section. Trail length, 5 miles, with the opportunity to extend for 5 to 10 miles on the Upper Guadalupe Nichols Landing Paddle Trail downriver. Float time, 2 to 6 hours, depending on water levels and flow rates. Note, once you leave the park, you won't be able to walk or take the river back.
What?
The river does not run in a circle. Nichols Landing is locked after sunset. No glass, styrofoam, or plastic containers under 5 ounces allowed on the river. Please leave, collect your trash. Yeah, it's a spelling mistake.
No containers under 5 ounces allowed on the river.
Mm-hmm.
So you're only allowed to bring large quantities of alcohol.
Which means you're probably going to not drink at all. And if you are, you're probably taking that bottle back for a refund.
It seems like the chances are they're trying to limit. I don't know what they're
trying
to.
Juice boxes, I guess. Collect your trash before leaving the river. Then trail description. Rugged hill country river is known for clear flowing waters. Extremely scenic beauty. Approximately 2.5 miles below the put-in, there's low water crossing. Paddlers will need to exit to the left and then re-enter the river below the crossing. You may portage the crossing, but do not trespass further onto the land.
Yeah.
Except during extreme droughts, there is always sufficient water for recreational use. So this is just somebody's private property that they're saying, okay.
They have guns.
Yeah. Respect private property by not trespassing or littering and keeping noise levels down. The river is classified as navigable, which permits public use of the stream bed and, if necessary, the banks to portage any hazard. Any other use of private riverbanks without permission of the landowner can be considered trespassing. Under Texas Penal Code 3005, criminal trespass occurs when one enters property and after receiving notice not to enter.
So if there's signage, you've been warned.
You've been warned. Just do that. You know, respect private property, yeah. That sort of stuff. Then there's a trail map. There's a big map. Like a big map board, like, you know, when we go on a trail, it shows you the route that you're going to take. This map shows, you know, the water trail, surrounding area, different notations on it, such as you are here, low water, Nichols Landing, Highway 281, etc. So all the things you're talking, okay, well, we're going from here to here, so that shows what we should be seeing, where we should be taking out, what we can expect. Oh, yeah, there's that low water area they say we might have to go over. To get out and cross, that sort of thing. Then they have a things to see and do section, fishing. This section of the river supports Guadalupe white, striped, largemouth, and smallmouth bass, gar, crappie, carp, and a variety of sunfish and catfish. Small lures such as jigs, plastic worms, spinner baits, and light line are recommended. Wildlife and ecology. The high limestone bluffs, rugged shelves and boulders, giant bald cypress, pecan, cottonwood, oak, elm, and palmetto trees, and wide variety of shrubs and vines lining the river provide diverse habitat for deer, armadillos. That's something we don't get to see.
Mm-hmm.
Raccoon. And you know, if we're down there paddling, we see an armadillo, we're wigging out, right?
Oh, yeah.
Look at that! Look at the armadillo! Get closer!
Exactly.
Raccoons, foxes, and squirrels. River beavers have also been sighted here.
River beavers? Is that different from a land beaver? A tree beaver? Or a mountain beaver?
Air beaver? I don't know. I guess just beavers in the river. Have also been sighted here. It is not unusual to see livestock watering in the river.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
A lot of farmsteads.
Then it gives a section on rentals and shuttles, which if you're a tourist and you want to get out there and check it out. So like Guadalupe canoeing camping, they'll give the address, the website.
What they have.
What they canoes, rafts, kayaks, tubes, shuttle services, camping. And there's Guadalupe canoe livery, Guadalupe river RV park campgrounds, nature trails, and again, same sort of stuff, canoes, tubes, shuttle services, camping. Hope to add kayaks soon. And then last is partnership. This trail was made possible through a partnership between Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, the Guadalupe River State Park, and the Water-Oriented Recreation District of Comal County.
So this is basically one example of one of those choose your adventure books you had growing up.
So yeah, so and there's
five zones, and each zone can filter down to dozens of little areas of water trails and land trails and so on, and it gives you all the details of what you're going to see, experience, rules, and
all these are water trails.
Yeah.
Right. And all so these 80 trails in these five regions.
Mm-hmm. So, this is, like I said, it's like choose your own adventure. This is what's here. This is what's to see. And
if you're a tourist going down there and mm-hmm. you know, oh, yeah, we're going to be on the west side of Texas.
Yeah, we're going to be.
Then, you know, wherever, you can look over there. Here's what's over there. Here's what's available.
Yeah.
If we're going to the coast, then we're going to hit the coast region one and see what's available there. And, you know, we're going to be right there. And there's a dude like 5 miles from where we're going to be that rents canoes or kayaks or whatever sort of deal, right? And then you can just choose your destination from there.
Choose your adventure.
Choose your adventure in Texas. So, yeah, Google.
That's a nice find.
Google Texas paddling trails, Texas water paddling trails. And then you'll be able to find all that. I did find the site was a bit slow at times, though.
Yeah.
A bit.
Probably because it's popular. There's a lot of people on it.
Maybe.
It's popular. And plus, it's winter. So that's if you're from any of the northern states or Canada and you're getting down to the area, it's still warm there.
Yeah.
You can still go and paddle, and you want to get away from the snow and you want to go paddling and go down to Texas.
Right.
They do get snow there occasionally. They do have freezing conditions occasionally, but for the most part, Texas is still warm all winter. Warm-ish.
And if you're going down to Texas, just say hi to West Hanson.
Yes. Yeah.
Another thing I came across, if we're planning a trip right now,
mm-hmm.
we're planning for next year.
Yes.
Unless it's a massive expedition, then maybe it's a couple years out. December 3rd, Western River Expeditions website started accepting reservations for Grand Canyon 2026 departures.
This is like if there's a major concert, it's like you're hovering over your keyboard for 7 a.m. or getting your kids in swimming, you're hovering over a keyboard at 7 a.m. or you want
to... Trying to get a winter camping spot.
winter camp spot 5 months out,
right?
Hovering over your keyboard at 7 a.m. This thing here happened on December 3rd, so it's already too late.
Right? But like 2 years in advance...
Yeah.
Early bird booking dates are expected to secure reservations for up to 90% of Western River Expedition's 2026 Grand Canyon vacations inventory.
Yeah.
It says, historically, demand outpaces supply. Within hours of the reservation window opening, many departures are sold out. To protect the canyon, and we've talked about this many times, the National Park Service closely regulates the number of rafting participants traveling through the Grand Canyon each year, creating space limitations and a scramble for reservations. How long till it ends up being 3 years in advance?
Well, imagine if you just let as many people go that wanted to go, like the area would not survive.
It would just be overrun. Chaos. Well, then you got these river traps. It'd be like the 401 here at rush hour.
Exactly.
You just have group after group after group waiting for the previous group to get. It's like a golf course, a busy golf course on Saturday.
Or
wait for the forceman ahead of you to get through.
Be like loading yourself into a lift lock when they do that once a year.
Oh, yeah.
And you're bumper to bumper in canoes and kayaks.
Yeah. Could you imagine 50 rafts going down, like, was it Lava Rapids or something like that?
I can't imagine.
Yeah, all at once? that'd be absolute... And you'd end up with deaths.
Yes.
And injuries. And
they've been experiencing these overrun areas since COVID. There's a few parks that are considering closing large sections.
Mm-hmm.
because they are just becoming
overloved,
yeah. Overused.
Yeah. To protect the canyon, the National Park Service closely regulates the number of rafting participants traveling through Grand Canyon each year. Rafting season on the Colorado through the Grand Canyon runs from April to September. Details on trips Western River Expedition offers expedition guides. These include river maps, overviews, full itineraries, camping, weather information, details on physical requirements, packing lists, and more. So all the outfitters that are you want to go through the Grand Canyon are going to have this kind of information that you can get from them. And for those who are flexible or miss the boat on Grand Canyon reservations, two lesser-known options to rafting the Grand Canyon include a four-day trip through Utah's Cataract Canyon, referred to as the Grand Canyon's younger sister.
Why sister?
I don't know. Located deep within Canyonlands National Park, the canyon is near enough in scale, appearance, and proximity to the Grand Canyon. Or a five-day family-oriented journey down Desolation Canyon on the Green River in Utah. This is a mellower, but offers a rafting experience suitable for kids as young as five. Hmm. Or guys named Derek.
Hey!
Sorry, was that my outside voice again? Yes. That's been happening more and more. I saw this, It's good information to have if you're thinking about doing it while you're not doing
it
this summer. You need to plan far. But 2 years in advance.
Yeah.
Like December 2024, you need to be there ready to press that button first thing.
So that's guided trips. If you're doing a private trip.
Oh, forget it.
There's a lottery system.
We've talked about that as well.
Yeah. So there's a lottery system just for private trips. And so to get onto one of these private custom trips, like you get your name in the lottery, and if you get it, it's like, oh, I guess we're going.
Right.
Because it's that one opportunity. It's like winning the lotto, right?
Yeah.
So it's a very popular area, and they do have to limit access so that it doesn't get destroyed.
Well, and I mean, I was even showing Tracy some stuff that we've been watching the America's National Parks.
Mm-hmm.
It's all wildlife stuff, right?
Yeah.
And you see some of the scenery and stuff, and there's this big a rattlesnake that swims across the Grand Canyon.
Okay.
Like it'll swim across the river, and that allows it to reach more hunting grounds.
Yes.
And stuff. So it's not just stuck on this side. This thing's massive.
Mm-hmm.
But we're looking at all that area and you're thinking, wow, like that's just, and I said, if you go on a trip there, like you've got to haul out all your waste, everything.
Yeah.
And he just sort of looks at me like, yep.
The only thing you can leave behind is footprints and urine.
Right. So, anyway, so if you're thinking about going to the Grand Canyon, 2027 is your
that's your next goal.
That's your next goal.
Planning ahead, 2027.
Right? So, what are you guys doing for vacation 2027? Grand Canyon.
It's planning out ahead.
Okay, what are you doing for 2028? Grand Canyon. If we can't get 2027,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, with that many people going down, and that it makes you wonder whether you really want to go there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, exactly. And to plan that far out, like I don't look far ahead when I plan.
No, like I'm the next year. Like, I mean, we're looking at August, Japan right now.
Yeah.
Next dog. I'm so not looking for 2025.
Yeah. Or
26, I should say.
2026.
Yeah. I'm never more than a year in advance.
Yeah. It's tough.
Yeah. But like I say, unless something like massive
something
thing comes
that's
up.
That's hard to get, hard to find, hard to see and do.
And there's a lot of planning to go. There was an article I was reading, Paddling Magazine had it out. I think it was 10 reasons paddling expeditions fail.
Oh.
And a couple of them sort of hinted at it was lack of planning.
Oh, yes.
And one of them was like, things beyond your control, like low water levels, high water levels, weather, you know. And then, of course, there's all this philosophical, well, what do you consider a failure? Did you start? Did you finish?
Did somebody die?
Did you have a great time along? Can you look back and laugh and say you had a good time?
Yeah.
So did you really fail?
Mm-hmm. Did you have to be rescued? Did you have to be rescued?
Yes. What? Yeah. So, anyway.
Well, our Burt Reynolds Memorial River Run, which was, it would have been 2022. I can't remember. Anyways, we were supposed to go up to Moosonee Moose Factory. Mm-hmm. And so we were watching water flows and water levels on the river. And a couple weeks out, it's like, no, there's no rain this year. It's a dry summer. The water levels are low. Nobody's running this river right now. Like we reached out to outfitters. And they said, oh yeah, nobody's running that river this year. It's too low.
Oh, there were spots we hit when we did it in October.
So you were September, on the Moose. Yeah. We were going to be.
You're hitting all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were doing Whitewater, Thunderhouse Falls and stuff.
Yeah. But even the Moose was, there were spots where it was low.
Very low. Yeah.
Yeah. Scott was out walking and then I went over to a little bit deeper and got the canoe pole out.
Oh.
And I just pulled along the river watching him walk. It was awesome. We talked about Ted Danson and his wife there. Yeah. Well, I can never remember. Steenbergen.
I can't remember.
I can never remember what her first name is. Anyway, we talked about them and, you know, how their marriage has lasted so 30 years. And, you know, they spent time in a canoe together. Their first kiss was in the canoe, the whole deal. And then brought up the whole conversation about, you know, if you can canoe with the person and, you know, chances are you got a good chance at a good relationship.
Yeah.
Five ways whitewater rafting brings families together.
Hmm.
My opinion is, and I'll mention a couple of them at the end there. They missed a few. In an age dominated by screens and digital distractions, Western River Expeditions is helping families unplug and reconnect through exhilarating whitewater rafting vacations by navigating the rapids together. Families are forging stronger bonds, creating lasting memories in the heart of nature.
Ooh, sounds so rosy and colorful.
It sounds a lot more rosy and colorful. And if anybody that's got kids, multiple kids, knows, a couple of them are going to go, this is going to be great. And one of them is going, do I have to go? Can I stay with grandma and grandpa? Can I stay with my friends?
Yeah.
Or do I really have to go? There's a unique magic that happens when families face the river's challenges together, says Cam Wixom, marketing director at Western River Expeditions and a seasoned river guide since 1991. Away from the constant buzz of technology, families engage fully with each other and the natural world. strengthening their relationships in profound ways. And I only make fun because I've been on the end where one of them just wants nothing to do with it. That changed over time, thankfully. But Wixom, who began his rafting career alongside his future wife and now a father of five, has witnessed firsthand how whitewater rafting demands active participation and teamwork from every family member. The river as a catalyst for family unity. Mm-hmm. Says there's five ways that the whitewater rafting will bring your family together.
Bring your family closer together.
Number one, teamwork and communication. Families must listen to guides and collaborate to navigate the river, fostering coordination and unity. I may have to paddle, but I'm not going to like it. Building trust. Overcoming obstacles together strengthens trust and highlights the importance of relying on one another.
I can see that. That's huge. Like, you normally, on a normal day, it's like, get off your phone. No, you can't have your digital device at the mm-hmm. dinner table. And you know, and instead of at, you know, you have to have pointed questions because it's like, how was your day? Good. Well, what did you do today? Stuff. Oh. Things. So it's better because kids want to tell stories when they're out on the river.
Well, the other thing is, if you're wearing a helmet, put a cam on your head.
Yeah. Yeah, that too. But, you know, they'll be talking about that around the campfire afterwards about, hey, we saw the beaver, we saw that moose, we saw this. So there's a lot of excitement, mm-hmm. you know.
It may not happen at the time.
Yeah.
But afterwards.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, it's that trust that's built when yeah, hey, I didn't realize Dad could carry a big pack like that. Or I didn't realize Dad was going to pull me out of the rapids and save my life. And
even the mom said, don't. One less mouth to feed, yelled Dad. Disconnect to reconnect.
That's important.
Time away from devices allows family to engage deeply with each other and the environment. Developing resilience. Facing the river's challenges builds resilience and problem-solving skills in both children and adults. Creating shared memories.
That's big.
The excitement and beauty of the journey create unforgettable experiences that families cherish for a lifetime. And that's true, because we still now talk about trips we did when we were, yep, when the kids were still young.
My kids do too.
You know, I remember going through the Barren Canyon and, you know, Mackenzie, mm-hmm, and Ariana fishing, and I couldn't because I was constantly taking,
yeah,
fish off their hooks. Unlike theme parks or beach vacations, whitewater rafting requires everyone to be present and engaged. It's an adventure that brings out the best in each family member. I feel, you know, I do agree with what he's saying.
Oh, yeah, yeah, all this. Yeah.
So, I mean, and I mean, it doesn't even have to be whitewater. It could be like a canoe trip or something, yeah, like that. Get out there together and go on these trips as a family, right?
So, I have a few coworkers that they're not very outdoorsy, but like one guy, he's starting to take his family to like Mew Lake and stuff, yeah, and car camping. And so and that's a stretch for him and his family. And so he's starting to try out these things and experiment with bigger and longer trips. And I've been talking to him. I said, hey, you know, if you want to try a backcountry trip, I can help you and your family and get you into the backcountry. And just, right, even just one portage, just somewhere where you're not around large groups of people. You're on a campsite surrounded by forest.
And it's a quick, easy get out,
too. It's a quick, easy get out if you have to, an emergency. And I said, I'll guide you through it, or I'll even go with you if you want. And yeah, and so it's opening, stretching your abilities and stretching your experiences and creating new memories about how, and you know, if, like, so he's from, him and his family are from India. And so they're trying. They're trying to do these bigger and better things.
Yeah.
They're not used to like the big lakes and forests. They're like, that's so strange to them, right?
But I mean, even if they went and parked at like Rain Lake, an access, yeah, 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 lake.
Oh, exactly.
And then you just paddle, yeah, to the far, not end of the lake.
Not even doing a portage, just going out on the Rain, yeah, Lake.
Set up, you're, yeah, still in the backcountry.
Yeah.
And then like, I mean, if you were on one site and they were on another,
exactly,
site.
Exactly. And unfortunately, that's, and we discussed it. I said, so this is what you'd be up against, because, so he's used to having a large cook set and a larger stove and a larger this and a larger that and giant inflatable mattresses and so on. It's like, well,
you'd have to take him out on a couple there of trips.
You'd have to,
by,
yeah,
himself first.
This is what you're going to have to do. This is, yeah, what you have to experience. This is all the new stuff you're going to have to buy.
Now take your family out and that I've taught you all this and break it to them.
Yes.
Good luck, buddy.
Don't tell them ahead of time.
Where's the big stove?
Yeah.
Let me teach you about cooking on a fire.
Exactly.
So how was camp? We burned everything. We drank water for 3 days.
But there's lots of opportunities. Like I know on Magnetawan, there's some sites that are a 5-minute paddle from the pudding.
Yeah.
And so that's reasonable because, yep, you're still near the vehicle. You could make multiple trips if it was difficult and whatever. And I've been out with enough people to know that paring down your gear is the hardest thing to do.
Oh, yes.
Right? Yep. And just to know that you don't need this, you don't need that. Oh, but you need this. So that I think that's one of those experiences when he takes his family out that he's...
But they said I could use really big leaves instead of toilet paper. No, this is the fall. There's no leaves.
Yeah. Poison ivy and poison oak, yeah, is the best thing to use.
Right?
So, yeah. But, yeah, I agree. There's a lot of stuff that this can... the experiences that you create with family when you do stuff like this, like it may be scary in the moment, but once you get a couple under your belt, it's a lot better. It's a lot
easier.
You're
going to laugh at the mistakes you,
exactly,
made to begin with. And stuff.
Exactly.
I do think they missed a couple of good ones, though. laughing at the family member that falls out, and Dad says, it's okay, we don't need them anyway.
We didn't need that one.
We'll
make another.
The entertainment the rest of the family gets when one of them gets chased by a snake or a small animal.
Yes.
Like, you can't buy that kind of entertainment. Yeah.
Don't panic. It's a garter snake. Why is that giant bird chasing me? That is a horse fly. Don't worry about it. It's not a giant bird. It's so big.
It's not going to bite you.
It will.
I've been on trips where people go way overboard when they see like a big dragonfly or something on them.
Yeah.
They think it's going to bite and it's going to sting. And it's like, oh my God.
We're not Australia. Yeah. Not, everything's not out to kill you.
Steve, one of our listeners, he sent us a thingy. I was going to show it to you. It's Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's green. It's all colored green.
Yeah.
There's a black line, you know, on the show, the
outline
of the country.
Yeah.
And then all the ocean's blue. And it says, there's a little green box. Places where land animals will kill you. And then there's a blue box. Places where water animals will kill you. And then there's a black line. Both. I saw that. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, that's what
that's pretty much what I thought. Yeah. That's what I thought. Some of the people just go absolute bonkers thinking something is going to get them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, it's not going to get you. You just
what was it in Australia? They were saying that I think it was in the 60s or 70s. Now, I'm just working from memory, so I'm not going to be accurate here, but they had the Great Emu War. And so they had like all the remote counties and regions of Australia, and they were putting up fences, and they had this giant hard-fought battle to reduce or control the population of the emus because they were ruining farming and stuff like that. And apparently they lost the battle with the emus.
Really?
Yeah, they lost. They just gave up. They said, okay, we'll just deal with large, tall fences.
Steve sent this one to me. There it is, the tourist map of Australia.
Places where land animals get you. Places where ocean...
Both. Yeah, you're in Australia. Yeah, something's going to get you. So, you know what? Take your family out. We've been doing it since the kids were little.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there's times where you just want to throw them overboard. And then there's times where, you know, you guys just have a fantastic time.
Oh, yeah. Once
they get over that initial, well, I'm no sense fighting that I can't have my phone.
So we've had the kids out from a very, very young age. So it's very normal for them. They know they lose access to electronics. They don't have TV. And so they can both self-entertain very well. They'll play with rocks or do this or that or have little, Beckett will bring some Lego men or something, right? And they'll just play. And so it's very serene. It's very quiet. There's not a lot of activity and Stella will read a book. And so they're used to it. They're used to the hardships of carrying packs and gear and setting up camp and breaking down camp and making sure you're organized in camp and not letting gear go astray. Always make sure you know where everything is at all times. The last thing you need is like, oh, hey, water filter. Did we leave that hanging in the tree? You don't want that, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of organizing and I always try to do the high level stuff, but I'm more and more downloading stuff to the kids because I want them to be experienced and capable in the backcountry.
Yeah.
And they're getting pretty good. They're getting really good.
Take your family out.
Heavier and heavier packs they're getting used to. Eventually, I won't have to carry one.
Get goats. Tell them. You guys don't start carrying more, I'm trading you in for goats.
Yeah.
Then you're good. While I was Googling, I came across an article. Full-service flights to Asia plummet. just a little constructive criticism. When you're talking about flights and you're talking about the price of the flights are going down, spell that out. Don't use the word plummet. Full service flights to Asia plummet.
Yes.
Thousands dead. And they all had hamsters.
You were cold.
They were cold. Are you sure they're dead? We talked back in episode 452 about the Flathead National Forest was looking for input on whether they should renew permits for 5 commercial rafting outfitters. Yeah. Remember that?
I do. There's a back and forth on it, and and I wasn't sure. I still don't think I fully understand the concern about renewing licenses.
Well, they're for 10 years.
Yeah, but
right.
These are the people that are taking care of the river.
Right? No, these are the outfitters.
They take care of the river. It's their,
so they say.
It's in their best interest to make sure that the long-term survivability of the environment, the river, the shores, the landings, and so on, they want to make sure everything is maintained because it's their way of life. It's their business.
Exactly. The Moore's thing is... So they received more than 30 comments, which to me...
It's not a lot.
A lot.
I was expecting, when we talked about it and they said that there is a public input period, I'm thinking, well, that's a large area. There's a lot of people involved. And I was thinking in the range of hundreds of responses.
You'd figure. Comments run the gamut of from those who question whether it's a good idea to extend their permits for another 10 years to comments from the outfitters themselves supporting the measure. One of the most pointed concerns comes from the Flathead Valley chapter of Trout Unlimited, which is calling for further analysis before issuing permits. Given the precarious status of threatened bull trout and West Slope cutthroat trout in the Flathead and elsewhere, it is inappropriate to use categorical exclusion to reissue 10-year permits. Negative effects of human and angler use on bull trout are well documented in the federal recovery plan, Wade Friedenberg, the president of the Trout Unlimited, says. They point to high incidence of hook scars on fish. The fishery for cutthroat is all catch and release, and the increase in river use over the past decade.
So there's no, you don't keep any of these fish. They're all catch and release.
All catch and release. There's no changes to the authorized facilities or increases in the scope of magnitude of authorized activities is patently false. There are increases in scope and magnitude over the past 30 to 50 years, and those increases appear to be accelerating. The degree to which the permitted activities are contributing to this needs to be analyzed.
So
that's a lot of what a lot of them are saying is, like, Trout Unlimited did not oppose the reissuance of the permits.
They just want more analysis.
They simply asked for more analysis, namely getting a comprehensive river management plan for the Three Forks of the Flathead River completed first.
So is there these outfitters, are there fishing outfitters and rafting, canoeing, kayaking outfitters?
I think all of them offer fishing trip
fishing
guided
component?
Fishing components as well, yeah.
So it's a lot of pressure on the fish stocks. It's not that you're keeping the fish, but there's a lot of damage to the fish.
Right.
It's barbless fishing. I think it's barbless.
Should be barbless. They usually, most of the places are, I do, up here anyway.
Yeah, if it's catch and release by law, then it should be barbless.
Mm-hmm. Flathead Valley Trout Unlimited does not support rubber stamping their permit process, especially not for another 10 years. Longtime outfitter and guide Hillary Hutchinson supported the reissuance of the permits, of course. Notes that outfitters have a history of good stewardship of the resource.
This is what I was talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm. Glacier Raft Company should continue operating on the same capacity with allowances for controlled growth. Our clients appreciate our leadership role as river guardians. This is a responsibility my coworkers and I take seriously as we partner with biologists and river managers, community and industry leaders, nonprofits and NGOs, and the greater recreating public. We value our teamwork with the United States Forest Service to strengthen and maintain solid river management. You hope that's what they're doing, that they're looking after
exactly.
It. They're maintaining it. says, we're focused on environmental, recreational, and cultural connectivity of our public lands here at the Crown of the Continent. We take pride in providing guests with accurate information on hydrology, entomology, ecology, botany, climatology, wildlife biology, and the area's cultural significance.
That was the dog.
While we enjoy working and playing on the Flathead River system, the river's health and pristine longevity comes first, Hutchison says. Also noted, she testified in front of Congress on the impacts of climate change on the industry. But others claim the rivers are simply getting too crowded.
That's where the problem crops up,
right? The Forest Service needs to remember their job is to take care of the wild and scenic middle fork of the Flathead, not fill the pocketbooks of the outfitters. There is nothing in the wild and scenic river law that says Forest Service has to capitulate to the outfitters.
No, I agree with that.
Says local residents.
I agree with that.
Right? Even some guides thought there should be more oversight. Most fishing guides employed by the rafting companies have little to no experience guiding anglers, claimed Mark Fuller, head guide and owner of Wild Montana Anglers and West Glacier. Most are seasonal workers living outside the area except for the summer. The rafting companies knowingly hire these individuals without any previous fish guiding experience. It should be noted that there are some very good guides on the forks of the Flathead, but they represent a low percentage of the overall number of fishing guides. Lack of experience with these guides is most evident in fish handling, river safety, and etiquette with other anglers using the river. By not implementing some sort of vetting process with the fishing guides that work on our low-density cutthroat and bull trout fisheries, the Forest Service will continue to see declines in the fisheries due to commercial misuse. It is the utmost importance that the permit holders be held to a high standard when using fishing guides, and this has not been done. So it seems like most of the comments, the negative comments and the reasons not to extend automatically the 10-year, all has to do with the fishing.
Yes.
So if there was no fishing aspect in here, it probably wouldn't be.
If you're floating on the river, there's no harm, no foul, no risk. If you're being environmentally sensitive, what the problem is they're saying that the fish stocks, while most of them are catch or release, depending on the species, it's just still damaging.
Yeah. There is a local resident says, along with a lot of others, said common theme was to simply authorize a permits for a couple years, not 10, until a river plan was completed.
That's a fair...
That's along my line of thinking, okay, if everybody's that much, just reauthorize it for a couple years, and during that 2 years, you get the river plan done.
Yeah.
And find out.
Figure out the best way to protect the resource, right? A better way to better train the guides who are going to be guiding some of these fishing trips, and, you know, better protect the ecological situation when it comes to the river and life on the river.
Right. Another option would be to include additional language into any renewal contract that upon adoption of a new CRMP, the contract will be revised immediately to reflect new requirements in the CRMP. I further request that any renewals require toilet systems be carried on all commercial river trips, not just full-day and multi-day trips. So it sounds like there's lots of pit stops along the way being used.
What's CRMP? I'm trying to find that.
Oh, the river management plan.
Okay, I didn't see where that acronym was created.
That was farther up.
Damn acronyms.
Those acronyms, they're everywhere. Forest Service did not make the comments available in a public reading room like it has with other Forest Service issues. It released these comments after the Hungry Horse News requested them through a Freedom of Information Act request. Regardless of opinions on the matter, river use is definitely up. So, yeah, we'll have to keep our eyes out, see what happens. But that was nice to get that update.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that. And like you said, we had discussed this previously. They're saying that river usage has surged. And I think what the issue is it because of, I hate that I constantly reference it, but I think it's a fact of life now that COVID has changed mm-hmm. a lot of stuff.
Since
2021, since COVID hit, a lot more people are going into the backcountry, doing a lot of these stuff. So I think it kind of kick-started a lifestyle change amongst a lot of people, and there a lot more people are saying, "Yeah, I need to get out from concerts, TVs, and ball games, and see what's out in the backcountry, and enjoy a little bit more of life out in the wild, as opposed to the inner city living that I'm used to." Yada yada yada. Right. So I think it was. It's weird timing that these contracts are due at the same time that these all-time high usage of rivers, like, and you're seeing it everywhere.
I think that's just...
It's just populations are up.
Yeah.
People are realizing that there's something outside their four walls, and so people are trying to experience more. And even now, like, with any... They say a lot of people are saying, I went to this location in the summer and tourism and the locals are like, tourists, go away. And it's like, well, if you want to experience the culture of the location, you have to go in the off season.
Yeah.
You can't go with the crowds. And the same thing with a lot of the stuff. Like when you have a lot of crowds, it puts a lot of pressure, especially environmental pressure in a lot of locations. Mm-hmm. And we have to start being smart about it because world populations are up everywhere and there's not much you can do about it, right?
No, and everybody wants to get out of the city, right? Because that's where everybody is.
You want to get out and experience stuff. You want to get out. The quietness. Get the buzz out of your ears.
Yeah. Speaking of going to places,
mm-hmm.
let's take a little trip across the pond to Scotland. Pier House Hotel in Port Appin by Loch Linney in Scotland serves very fresh seafood.
Like very fresh.
Staff uses kayaks to collect lobsters from the adjacent sea loch. Scotland always seeks out places at the end. Always seek out places at the end of single track roads, advised sea kayaker David Johnson. They're always the best. David is the restaurant manager at Scotland's Pier House Hotel. For when the tide is too high for the kitchen staff to fetch lobsters from the hotel's pierside creels, he paddles along the sea loch to unload the salty crustaceans himself. Head chef master Michael Leithley is a seafood specialist from the port town of North Shields in the northeast of England. His grandfather was an inshore fisherman, and it was from him that he developed his love of cooking fish, something he does very well. The Loch to Fork Pier House restaurant was named Scotland's National Restaurant of the Year for 23-24. So, yeah, they must be doing something right. Before hitting the restaurant, you can take a 5-hour learn to sea kayak session farther north on Loch Carron through Sea Kayak Plockton. From the port village of Plockton, which doubled as the pagan village in the 1970s cult horror movie The Wicker Man. Emerald green waters, which combined with Plockton swaying palm trees, warmed by the Gulf Stream and the white sand of the Loch's coral island, create a positively Caribbean vibe through a camera lens anyway. Temperatures were anything but tropical, and the white sand is actually bleached seaweed. After a long day of paddling, you can fill up on dishes such as Aberystwyth smoky souffle starter and a main of grilled fresh cod in a burnt butter hollandaise.
Ooh.
Or a seafood platter heaped with Loch Linney lagostine and lobster, sweet herring, Loch Leven mussels, and Loch Carron oysters.
So it's a very unique business model. Uh-huh. Like, I don't think they're catching the fish, but they do say they definitely go
they
out
definitely get the lobster.
And get the lobster. So it's
I think they're out there catching the fish, too.
So when you hear about market price, and it's like, so market price doesn't really apply here.
No. So hey, it's going to be a bit cheaper.
Yeah, it's like Johnny, your server there, he just, before he came on to shift, went out and ran the line of traps, yeah. And he pulled up six of the lobsters that you see in that tank there, so they were just caught by staff today.
Right? I mean, we've talked about doing these trips where, you know, you paddle around and maybe stop at a cheese place and
yeah.
for cheese and wine, lunch, that sort of thing, get back in your kayak and paddle. Well, this one here, you can paddle. Or you can go learn to paddle, and then go for a really good meal and stay the night at the hotel. Yeah. And pretty cool.
It is. It's pretty.
I mean, if they're not catching the fish in that themselves, you got to think it's local. It's
pretty local. Yeah.
Pretty local, right? Yeah. Which is cool. I have been doing some research into Japan.
You got a major trip still. Coming up.
Yeah, finding out a lot about sea kayaking and a lot of stuff I'm finding out about mixing your trip with paddling, food, culture, and history. Finding out there's way too much to do in a couple of weeks. Definitely going to be hard to cram into a couple of weeks. When it comes to paddling, there's so many choices. Like, it's not something that really is out there.
Yeah.
Like, paddling in Japan isn't what most people go to Japan to do.
Absolutely not. Right? No. It's more of a culture thing.
So much. I mean, do you go paddling along the coast or do you go interior, north, south, east, west? You get things like this. In addition to its culinary appeal, Yamaguchi Prefecture offers an exciting opportunity for outdoor enthusiasts. In Nagato City, travelers can embark on a sea kayaking adventure along the Sea of Japan. The Bonnie Bay Sea Kayak Center offers guided tours that allow visitors to glide through the crystal clear waters, exploring the rugged coastline, lush cliffs, abundant marine wildlife up close. Whether you're an novice or experienced kayaker, the serene journey offers a peaceful escape into nature. Sea kayaking in Nagato is an eco-friendly activity that promotes environmental awareness while immersing visitors in a breathtaking natural beauty of Yamaguchi's coastline.
Hmm.
Right?
We've been talking a lot throughout this podcast about different opportunities that are there in Japan. And we've covered a few of them. Like this is not what the opportunity now that you're coming across is that your daughter lives there.
Right.
So you have a family member to visit.
We now have a car to use as well.
Oh, there you go.
She bought her first car.
She bought a car. Oh, did she get it? She sent you a picture. I need to see a picture.
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
But it's not like a North American type car.
Do they?
There's definitely smaller cars there.
What side of the road do they drive on in Japan?
The left.
So like Britain.
The wrong side.
The wrong side.
Yeah. Like Britain, the wrong side.
Yeah.
Yeah. You people over there don't know what you're doing.
What?
In the States.
Yes.
If they smile, does that mean we smilometer?
What?
I saw that on today. Mile, kilometer? Oh. Smile, smilometer?
Oh my God.
You're going to be shaking your head all night.
Bad dad joke.
Anyway, yeah, she got her first car, so we've got a car to use while we're going.
That's
there
awesome.
Too, all over the place.
It's the tiniest little thing.
As long as it holds my gear, I don't care. Gets me to the water, I don't care. We've talked about the log rafts on the Kitayama River through Daroukyo Gorge in southern Japan, which is just south. I think it's like an hour, 2 hours south of Tokyo.
Yeah.
Could go canoeing in Chubetsu Lake and River in Hokkaido, which is only like an hour or so away from her. Then there's the Sea of Japan. Tons of coastal paddling to do. Paddle through one of the national parks of Japan, and you can just Google all that too. North end of Hokkaido, which is like 40-ish kilometers from Russia.
Oh, yes.
Paddle up there. The opportunities seem endless, and it is going to be hard to make some decisions on where to go. And I'm going to contact, there's a couple of groups there I'm going to contact. And
because if you had sufficient time, there's a lot of stuff you can do, but it's not like you're going to be there for 6 months. Or are you?
Depends how work goes over the next year.
But back to the car thing. So she would have had to get a Japanese driver's license.
International. She got that before she left here.
Oh, did she?
Yep.
Right on.
So
now she's a fairly new driver. I think where the difficulty would come in would be anybody with years of experience, and they have to start driving on the wrong side of the road.
Well, one of the schools she teaches at is in the mountains.
Yeah.
And the school board has a car that she uses every week.
Oh.
I think twice a week she goes there.
So she's been out driving.
She's been out driving. Yeah. Yeah, she's been out driving for the last couple months. So, yeah. I'm not saying she's a good driver, because I haven't seen, but no, I you pick it up.
I remember the first time I was in my Navy days when I was in the military. We went into Southampton, England, where the Titanic's launched from. And so the ship came in. We came into port. We got a cab. I'm in the backseat of the cab, and just every instinct in your brain tells you certain things, right? This is mm-hmm. what you're used to. And the cabbie lurched out into traffic, and I thought I was going to die. And then I realized, oh, he's not going on that side of the road. Scare the crap out of me.
Have you ever driven in Manhattan?
Oh, I've seen video. I was like, yeah.
I lived it. I was a passenger, and we got picked up by this limo thingy, just town car from the airport, and driven to downtown Manhattan. We had a meeting downtown Manhattan. And so we picked up at the airport, driven downtown, and I'm just going to look up at the skyscrapers, because if I look at the road, I'm going to punch the driver in the back of the head.
I can't mentally participate in this.
Right? I'll ride in the trunk on the way back to the airport, if you don't mind. Thank you.
I do not want to see what's happening.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see what happens next August.
That's pretty impressive that she's got her own car now in Japan.
The question is, do we go for 2 weeks or 3 weeks?
Oh, three. You got to go for three.
Yeah.
You got to.
Yeah.
It's not like you might have more opportunity. You don't know how long she's going to be working over there.
2 to 3 years.
It's limited.
Mm-hmm. So maybe we do 2 weeks and then 2 weeks. This is 4 weeks.
Yeah. 2 weeks. Yeah. 2 weeks.
But it's a plane flights over and back.
That's the hard part.
Yeah. On our Facebook page, I posted a couple of videos this week. You might want to check out, Gabin Uncharted, going down the Evindo River, Adrian Mattern, Dane Jackson, Bren Orton, Caleb Grady. Bren Orton's the, kayaker that, passed away earlier this year while paddling in Switzerland.
Had an
accident on the river.
Yeah.
And they couldn't find him for a number of days.
Yeah.
You start looking at that stuff, and that's a pretty cool, going down that river. Another one is I Chihuahua, Eric Boomer, Ben Stooksbury, both again, really good kayakers, paddling the mile deep Barranca Candemania in Chihuahua, Mexico, trying to be the first to descend the canyon by kayak. Again, pretty impressive scenery, pretty impressive water. Great to watch. I wouldn't want to participate. So how was your first day? Where do we catch the car back? yeah. You know what? Like Bren Orton, Dane Jackson, been watching their stuff. Eric Boomer, Ben Stooksbury, same deal. I love watching these guys in their videos. It's awesome. But yeah, a lot of it is just like, holy crap.
Hmm. Oh, yeah.
Like, I would not even... the skills you need.
Exactly. Like, yeah.
Great scenery.
Skills and experience.
Great waterways, but if you don't have... Definitely not for beginners.
Mm-hmm.
Not for novices, not for intermediates. You've got to be doing this for years to be looking at anything like this. But pretty cool. One's, I think, 17 minutes. The other one's 43 minutes long.
Okay.
But yeah, if you're looking for something to watch, definitely check those out there. Like I say, we got links to them on our Facebook page, Paddling Adventures Radio. So... other than that, you got anything?
I do not.
Why not?
I've talked at the first.
It's good. Next time, save for the last.
What's with the production pressure here?
I don't know, but apparently we're getting pressure from somebody that wants to leave the room.
I think she wants to go pee or something.
Apparently she's looking at us are you guys done yet?
She's circling and circling and circling and circling.
What are you guys doing? The door's closed. I'm not sleeping anymore.
I'm trapped and I'm awake.
Oh, yeah. Hi, dog. What are you doing? You got anything to say? No, she's just going to wiggle and look.
Yeah.
That's all she does. I wish she would howl at command. The husky half you is not participating.
No, no.
It does not participate. The German shepherd half is keeping the husky half in check.
Yes.
Unless it comes to rabbits. She stalks rabbits when we go on our walks.
Nice.
Exactly. She talks like that. And she burps like a human.
Yeah.
She does. Yeah. All righty. Well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes at iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share them with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.